Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome on to AANBC Radio. I am your host, AANBC founder and president, Tamika Newhouse. We are joined here also by Ms. Mallory Posa. Anna's going to be absent tonight. She may be able to come in later on tonight, not sure, but she, definitely me and Mallory Posa are going to hold it down. Mari, we still going to call you Mari, whatever. I'll get used to it, whatever.
Hi.
Hey. Don't go, hi. What was that?
I just said hi. Hi. Hello, Simona. Is that better?
You said what? Mocha. What?
Simona. You remember your nickname is Simona now because you were so mean last week?
Oh, Simona. Oh, Lord. For
Simon. Simon Cowell, except it's you.
I'm not mean. I'm not the devil. I'm just bluntly honest. But
you were mean last week trying to make me.
Oh, no, I wasn't mean. I was telling the truth because for those who didn't listen in that last week, we had the open mic session, and one of the very first guests on the show was totally boring, was totally dead. And I don't like for I had already said also, too, for you guys to come on and be lively, be personable, because if you sound boring, no one's going to want to read your book because they're going to think your book is boring. You are a reflection of your own work. So I got upset, obviously, about that because that takes away people's interest on listening to the show. No one wants to listen to monotalk and boring chatter. You know, no one wants to do that. So anytime anybody else comes on the show, I'm going to put them on blast. That time, I didn't put them on blast then. I put them on, like I mentioned at the end of the show. But in that process, if you are being a bore and you're harming our own personal rating where people will tune off, I'm going to let you know, and then I'm going to hang up on you. So, yeah, that's just me.
Oh,
but anyway, it's a random week. It's a brand new week, a whole new beginning. It's the week of Thanksgiving, so I'm excited about that. I have some things planned here and there. And for those who don't know, of course, we got the panel discussion. So we're going to tonight. So we're going to get more into discussion on what we're going to talk about tonight in the show. But before we do that, Mary, I'm going to turn it over to you. Let us know how you've been doing since the last show. What's been going on with you? What's new in your world?
Absolutely nothing. So this part will not be very long.
You know,
nothing
you seriously have to do life. You seriously have to do life. This is ridiculous. Like
I live crazy. In Beeville, Texas. There is no such thing as a life over here.
I mean, you must, like I said, you have to be in love to be living out there. Like I can't do it.
I really do.
I can't do it. But so since nothing interesting is going on in your world. I guess I will divert the conversation back on me, but of course, you know, the most important one anyway. So, so this week definitely has been pretty random. I mean, just, not random, but routine for me. Finishing up my, you know, working on my deadline for my next book and prepping for 2013. For those for artists who don't know, you definitely need to. You should have been working on your 2013 marketing plan, but if you're not, make sure that you are working on your marketing plan for next year so that you can have a concrete idea and vision on what you're trying to do. I'm personally going to start hitting up all the authors under Delphine Publications, which is the company I own and operate, and going to be talking with you guys individually on your 2013 goals. Let me make that note right here. So I need
ooh,
to put
looking
on
forward
it.
To that conversation.
I ain't saying it's going to be a conversation now. I don't like really talking on the phone with folks now. So it may be email. But speaking of Delphine Publications, Mary, do we have any Delphine news?
Yes, we do. The biggest thing going on right now, everyone needs to take out a pen and mark your calendars. November 23rd, Delphine is having a Black Friday sale. You would be the dumbest person on the planet to miss out on 99-cent e-books from the best authors there is out there. So check that out. DelphinePublications.com is the website. So tell a friend to tell a friend and get in on that. Let's see. Next month we have The Left Lane by Keith coming out on December 11th. And then, of course, Kisses Don't Lie Part 2. I don't even need to say who that's by, of course, obviously. On December 24th.
Go ahead and plug me. Plug me in. What you talking about?
What? Oh, come on. Really? Okay, the Diva next month is releasing Kisses Don't Lie Part 2 by, of course, Miss Tamika Newhouse.
Oh, my God, I am?
Really? Oh, she is such a diva. Oh, Lord.
Oh.
Anyway. Yeah, I think that's it for Delphine, as far as I'm concerned. I think so, anyway. Double-check that.
Yeah, but that's pretty much like the bulk of it. So for those who follow us on Twitter at AAM Book Club, we just tweeted out the promo that Delphine Publications is having for Black Friday. So make sure you go follow us on Twitter at AAM Book Club. Now, on AAMBC News, we're going to get ready to bring on LaShere Lee for our hot pick of the week.
Yay!
I know, I love that segment. That segment is hot. But before we do, definitely let's go over to aambookclub.com and let's see what news that we have going on with AAMBC this week. For those who do not know or have been blind, I have been relaying the message that we are doing our annual holiday book drive. We need to raise at least 1,000 books. The majority of the young adult and children's books are going to be going to the Boys and Girls Club in Austell, Georgia, which is a little suburb part of Atlanta. So if you please go to aambookclub.com, you will see the information for the holiday book drive and where you can be able to send in your books. And also you can send in monetary gifts if you choose to. We need a lot of books. This is our fourth year doing this. I'm really excited about this. We usually raise books for battered women, teen mothers, and children. Also, in more news, I want you to guys to click on Fall Tours. You can see what books that we are highlighting and reading this this month alone. We're reading Head Bitch in Charge by Caroline McGill. He Loves Me, He Loves You Now by Mashaya. Tears of a Hustler 4 by Silk White. And also our book of the month right now is Feel Good Spaces by Sherry Burton Ways. So please go and visit our website at aambookclub.com so that you can see all of the books that we're currently reading. Now, also a last note on AAMBC News. We are doing the voting process for our book of the year. This is not the AAMBC Literary Awards. No, those voting processes start next month. But what we're currently voting for now is all the books that we've read through AAMBC. We're voting on the top three books that we enjoyed this year. So make sure that you go follow us on Twitter and befriend us on Facebook under AAM Book Club and search for the link to vote. I'm also going to be putting a link out on our Twitter in just a minute so that you can go on there and vote and let us know what was your book of the year. And we're going to be revealing those books of the year here on the show on December 18th. So without further delation, let's go on and do our hot pick of the week. LaShere, I'll turn it over to you.
Good evening, ladies. Good evening, listeners.
Hello.
And you know what? I think that it is wonderful that you are sponsoring the book drive as an educator. I know how important it is for the children in our communities, especially, to get these books in their hands. You would be surprised how many kids do not come to kindergarten with any readiness skills. There were a lot of kids last year who had never held a pair of scissors or never held a crayon or a pencil or never had a book to call their own. So it is so important, and it is such a wonderful job that you're doing, making sure that kids in our communities get these books. But I just wanted one thing to say. You know, I read all across the board, but it's especially important for our kids to read books that reflect about them. So
exactly.
Often, because I'm a book brat, so I'm always buying books for classroom, even though I don't get it back in the sense and taxes. But when you see a child of color, be Hispanic, whatever, African-American especially, then when they get a book that displays their skin tone, their characters, and in situations they relate to, you can see the joy on their faces. And sometimes I've even had students say, older students especially, I didn't know they made books about me. So it's especially important if you can find and you can support these African-American authors, children authors that are on Amazon, Kindle, or in your neighborhood, please make sure that our children see books that reference them. And that's all I'm going to say about that. It is such a great job. It's wonderful what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Now, our hot book for the week. Now, you know, it's time for us to nestle around the campfire, so to speak, with all our relatives and grandma and Peaches and Pookie and all of them. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you may have that favorite uncle who, you know, maybe have too many beverages and want to spill all the family secrets. Well, that's kind of what Taboo Tree by Tanya Washington. It deals with a complex dynamic of secrets that go through the family from generation to generation. You know how you always have that cousin that may, not going to say always, but you know, in some families, they may have that cousin that kind of that doesn't look like their mother, but looks like their aunt, because actually their aunt is their mother. Well, that's the kind of story this is. You have the two feuding families, kind of like the Hatfield and McCoys, but these are the African-American family called the Gwatneys and the Augustines, and they have this rivalry that spans from generation to generation, and their children and their children's children and people in their community get caught up in these webs of lies. And when I say it's juicy, you will need a bib to wipe off your mouth. It is juicy. Uh-oh. And you really can't tell who's who, what's going to occur next, because let the necessary occur, the necessary and the unnecessary occur. You have two families, like I said, the Gwaltney's, obviously, and they're battling, but both of them are the town it. You have the Gwaltney's, and then the Augustines are more like your royalty in town. And the Gwaltney's, they inspire some way to be like the Augustine because they feel like they're bougie. They have their nose stuck up in the air. And the Gwaltney's suffer a death, that one of their family members suffer a death on the compound of the Augustines, and then that even heats up all the tension and the rivalry. And the story takes place, you know, you'll see famous. It starts in 1970s, and then it comes up to our modern times where you see the grandchildren. They still are experiencing the, if you will, the fallout from the rivalry from all years. I don't want to give away too much information, but you can tell by the title Taboo Tree that there are some taboo relationships that occur, being that these secrets have been kept from generation to generation. So, you know, as you are sitting around the tree and you eyeing at that cousin that perhaps looked like your great aunt, you never know what secrets are kept. So I will tell everybody, I will give this book 5 out of 5 stars. I don't give a lot of 5 stars out, but The Taboo Tree is a great book. It will keep your interest. And like I said, secrets will be unveiled that will rock the family for generations and generations. And I was reading this book aloud to someone who is a bedridden, and the nurse was the nurse was sitting by, and she stopped taking her notes to listening to what I was reading, and she said, "Ooh, child, you is having that book after you finish." And I tell you, this lady is probably in her late 50s, early 60s, and she was getting excited. So I will tell you, buy Taboo Tree by author Altonya Washington, and you will not be disappointed.
That
one is on my list.
You put it on your list, and you know what? We do need to make a book list, because, you know, we need to make sure that people buying books, you know, why you buying these boots and these overpriced tennis shoes for our kids? We need to make sure we do put some books under that tree. We do.
Exactly.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to email you about that tonight to put together a book wish list. We can do that.
We do. A wish list. And I will be supporting your book drive. I'm going to mail some books somewhere to someone in your vicinity, so they will go out to the different clubs or organizations or shelters, because we need to keep books alive. And, you know, like when you're going through some, perhaps some troublesome time, I know I have been in previous times, and when you read a book, it does captivate your mind, and it can take you any place, and you can be anywhere you want to be. So it's also a good way to escape. So I will most definitely support your book drive.
I agree. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I didn't even tweet it out or Facebook it, so I am about to do that now. So if you follow us on Twitter, as I stated, AAM Book Club, we're going to tweet out the information to you as well and Facebook it out if you're on our Facebook page. LaShara, can you please let everybody know where they can go check you out on Facebook and Twitter, where you will be at, and then also plug in your blog talk broadcast that you do as well?
Oh, Facebook, you'll find me on LaShara Lee, Twitter, Read You Later, and blog talk, www.blogtalkreadyoulater, and I also do book reviews for Emerge Magazine and a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But I just want to thank you for the opportunity, and I hope that everyone has a very blessed and happy and safe Thanksgiving.
You too, man. Definitely you too. I can't wait. I'm ready to just eat up. So I appreciate it, Ms. LaShara Lee. For those.
All right.
What you doing?
You all take care. What?
Thank you, Val. Have a good night.
All right. Night.
Again, everyone, I was Ms. LaShara Lee doing our hot pick of the week. For those, again, who are following us on Twitter and Facebook, we tweeted out the book Taboo Tree, which is pretty, it looks like a pretty interesting read. Don't really care for the covers. I definitely want to definitely make sure you guys, yeah, I don't.
Isn't
I want
nice.
You guys definitely.
Oh, my Lord.
whatever. Definitely, if Michelle says it's hot, it's a good book. So, without further ado, let's
start early.
On what? Be quiet. Let's bring on our guest of the evening. I'm really excited about bringing on Regina Brooks. Regina Brooks is the founder and, you know, sister owns and operates Serendipity Literary Agency. And I'm excited to bring her on, and I'm very humbled and grateful for her to even agree to come onto the show, talk about what it is that she does and how she even got involved in being a literary agent. And then, of course, we're going to ask her the obvious basic questions that artists want to know. They want to know, how did I get an agent? What does an agent do for me? You know, things like, how do I know if my agent is doing the right thing? You know, things like that. So we're going to get into a little bit of that. So without further ado, let's bring on Ms. Regina Brooks. Regina, if you can hear me, say hello. Welcome on to the show.
Hello. How are you? I'm here. Glad to be here.
I'm excited. I'm excited. This is actually my first time speaking to you on the phone. Anything.
I know.
I don't think we have the opportunity to meet. If we did cross paths, I'm not sure. So I'm really excited just to kind of listen to you, pick your brain. Because I've heard of you and your agency on various occasions since I've been in the industry, going into my fifth year.
Oh, okay.
So I definitely want to commend you guys on just staying consistent and kind of being among the elite now. So tell us a little bit about you. Are you a writer? You know, tell us how you even got started.
Okay, my story, I'm going to try and, because I want to be able to answer as many questions as possible, I'm going to give you the truncated version of my story. And I'll start by saying that I've been in publishing for 20 years. But before I was in publishing, I was an aerospace engineer. And I worked at NASA. And it was kind of a weird transition, and one of the reasons why I ended up calling my agency Serendipity, because I feel like, you know, the word serendipity means the idea of finding something valuable that you weren't necessarily looking for, and publishing was never, ever on my radar. I wanted to be an astronaut and was in the plans. That was all in the plans. And over a summer, I had the summer off. I was getting ready to start a program in a specialized area, interested in totally going into aerospace medicine and doing the space stuff. And I had this summer off, and I went to a program that Howard University had. It was a publishing institute. And while I was at that publishing institute in that program, they no longer have the program now, but it really just changed my mind. I changed my mind. I went into publishing. I started out in sales in the Washington, D.C. area, and I had the territory of Maryland, D.C., Virginia, Delaware, Pennsylvania, and basically worked for John Wiley & Sons. I started out at John Wiley & Sons, and I would go around to different universities and try to get them to adopt specific textbooks that were associated with the company. And then they moved me to New York after 9 months, and they made me an editor. And because I had a background in engineering, that was the category that I worked in. I did books with in aerospace and electrical, computer science. And I stayed there for about 7 years and then moved on to McGraw-Hill. And I worked for them for about a year, and then I started my agency. And my agency in January will be 13 years old.
Wow.
So that's the truncated version.
That's a long answer. You're very well educated, and you're definitely well spoken. So I'm going to make sure that I don't act too country tonight. I want to make sure
it's all good.
So, because, you know, the country can come out of me sometimes. But
that's all good. My family is from Mississippi, so.
Okay. All right. Cool. Let me relax a little bit. So you've been in this industry for a very, very long time. So I've seen it evolve and change many, many times. I don't know if you've even recently seen the letter that Virginia DeBerry and Donna Grant put out where they
talked about
the industry.
Yeah.
So just things like that makes you really reflect on how much things have changed So, of course, we're going to get more into that, but I want to also ask you, if, of course, we're focusing on literary agencies and your company as a whole. So tell us a little bit about Serendipity, what it is that you do, and how you even bring on clients. How do you even pick and choose who you want to work with?
Okay.
Oh, you stole my question.
That's a really good question. You guys can interrupt me at any point that you want to, but I'm just going to kind of start talking, and I think I'll answer a few questions along the way. Again, just interrupt me if you need to. I'll start out by saying that in the industry, you have a number of different layers. So you have your publishers, and then you have editors. And then you have, you know, publicity people, you have marketing people, and then you have the authors. In the 1970s, it was around that time that, you know, the literary agent really started to flourish. And what used to happen is editors, the publishing houses would have editors, and they'd have what was considered the slush pile. And authors can send in directly their manuscripts, and you'll hear stories about people whose books have been, you know, rescued from the slush pile, and they became bestsellers. And they would have editorial assistants, but they'd also have readers on staff, and those people were armed with the responsibility of reading all of the slush. Well, the reason literary agents came about is because after a while, some of those positions as readers went away, and they needed somebody or a group of people who would be able to be kind of the gatekeepers for the publishing industry. And so agents came about because they began to represent authors directly, and they became the editors used to contact the agents to see what kind of projects they had available. And agents became those people who would go through all the slush and find the jewels and the gems in the authors. So basically, as a literary agent, my role is to represent the author. I'm like a manager for an author. So as a manager would do, we shop the project to the publisher. We negotiate the contract. We mediate when it's necessary. I heard you say a little bit earlier that you didn't like a cover. You know, as an agent, I would, if my author wasn't happy with her cover, I'd contact the editor and have discussions about all the business aspects of what it takes to get a book published so that the author can stay creative, not kind of get caught up in the weeds of the business. So the agent is the author's representative. So,
gotcha.
At my agency, so when I first started out, my agency was small. It was just myself, and I had an intern. And now I have 5 agents, and they're spread out all over the country. Well, I should say the world. I have an agent who's in Honduras. I have. I also have foreign agents who will represent the, I call books content now, not just books. So you'll hear me use that word. They represent the content in foreign countries. And then I also have a film and television agent who works with me, and we co-agent projects. So when you think about the book, most people say, oh, I want you to sell my book. Well, now I tell people, no, you want me to sell your content. And what that means is taking that content and trying to sell it across a number of different media outlets, whether that be audio, whether it be ebook, whether it be television and film, and those are considered sub rights. So I'll let you ask some questions because I'm kind of talking.
Oh, we were enjoying listening.
Yeah, I'm definitely. I never try to assume that I know everything. The, you know, like I stated, this industry is constantly evolving.
Sure.
And I know that you said you have 5 agents, but you've been in existence for 13 years. It's a really small number for a long period of time. Are you picky or when it even comes to your agents as well as when it comes to your clients? How did you I guess, like, I guess I asked, how did you pick your, how do you pick your clients, but also how do you even decide if these are people that you want to represent serendipity?
Okay, so that's a very good question, and I'm going to answer that question by first starting out to tell you how agents get compensated. So,
okay, that's a good one.
So say you had a book, and you approached me and you said, Regina, I have, we'll start with fiction, and you said, Regina, I have this novel, and you would submit to me a query letter and maybe the first three chapters of your manuscript. And then I would read those first three chapters along with your query letter, and I'd say, oh, I really like this. Let me contact her and ask her for the remaining manuscript. So then I would read the full manuscript. And then once I made the decision, I'd say, you know, I'd have a conversation with you, and I'd say, I want to represent you. And then I'd maybe do a few tweaks here and there, and I'd start shopping your work. Now, if you think about it, I've read your query letter, I've read the first three chapters, then I've read the manuscript. So I would say at that point I will have at least spent maybe, and then had conversations with you, maybe 10 hours of work. Then I start shopping the book, which means I'm putting together a package that will then be submitted to different publishers, ideally the major publishers. There's six big ones, although they're starting to come together. and then I'm having conversations with editors about your manuscript. And all that entire time, not $1 has been exchanged.
Right.
So we don't, as agents, we don't get compensated until we sell a book. We don't make any money until we sell the book. So if I'm getting 200 queries a week, and that's pretty much what it's like just for fiction, and it's even more for nonfiction and young adult and children's. But if I'm getting 200 queries a week, I'm trying to find the projects that I think are going to be, I'm going to be able to sell. So a lot of people say, gosh, you know, this, you know, I'm always getting rejected. Well, there's numerous reasons why people get rejected, and I can go into that a little bit later. But we don't get paid as agents until we sell the book. And then we get 15% of what the author makes. So if the author makes $10,000, gets a $10,000 advance, we get what?
$1,500. Mm-hmm.
We live in New York. Most agents live in New York or in the tri-state area. $1,500 doesn't even pay your mortgage or your rent, let alone your, you know, utilities and so forth. So one agent has to sell numerous books just to make a living. And you asked me about, you know, why the number of agents is limited, is because it's a very, very tough business. And a lot of editors will start out as editors, and then if they get laid off or they might say, okay, I want to do this from the other side, and they'll start agenting, and then they're like, oh, my God, it is so hard to sell a book. And so if you think about it, it's a very expensive, you spend a lot of time because, again, if I'm getting 200 queries a week on top of nonfiction, I'm reading a lot. I'm constantly reading, and I could be reading and making absolutely no money. So it's a lot of output. So you have to have a very keen eye to be an agent. You have to have editorial experience to be a really good agent. You have to have, you have to be able to deal with a lot of different personalities. Most creative people, I'll just put it out there, are very crazy. and so you have to be able to, you know, oftentimes, especially with authors who are constantly trying to develop their work, you're having to nurture them. So it takes a certain type of personality to be able to be an agent, number one. And it also takes a person who has a level of sales ability. They need to be able to sell. They also need to be able to understand contracts. So it takes a lot to be an agent. And it's not for the weak. So, you know, there have been a number of agents who have worked with me who started out as interns, and then I developed them into either agents and or editors. So I have people who have worked for me over the course of this 13 years who have gone in-house and are now working as editors because that's a salaried position and you're not working strictly on commission.
Gosh. Okay. So this what you just explained and broke down, it gives authors more clarity on why they would get multiple rejections. So can you go more into on specific reasons on why they would get rejected? Because a lot of artists get multiple rejections before they even hopefully get a yes. And in the midst of the rejections, they may turn around and self-publish or yada, 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 or whatever.
Right.
So can you, besides the fact that obviously the agent needs to find something that they feel they can sell, what would be like the red flags where they say, oh, I can't sell this, I can't sell that, you know, do they go off the artist's personality, you know?
Oh, yeah, there's totally a checklist of things that an author needs to come to the table with in order to be represented. I'll start by highlighting three things, and this is with fiction and or nonfiction. The first thing you need is incredible writing. You know, a lot of people will have interesting stories, but when I start reading the manuscript, their grammar's off, or the story doesn't move, the pacing might be bad, they don't know how to work with dialogue. So you have to understand the basic, and even beyond basic, you have to be able to really share a story in a creative way that is that shows that you understand how to write quality work. So that's the first thing. The second thing you need to have a hook. So a lot of people will write a book, but it's like, gosh, I've heard that before, or that's not fresh, or how am I going to sell this as a unique story when, you know, I could pick up 5 to 10 other books that really cover the same storyline. So you need a hook, a fresh hook. And the third thing you need is a platform. So a lot of people get annoyed with the fact that celebrities keep getting these book deals. And the reason they're getting book deals is because they have a platform. And the platform basically just says that you have a number of people out there in the universe who are interested in what you say in whatever form it is. From a nonfiction standpoint, say you wanted to do a topic on relationships. We've all had relationships. We've all had the ups and downs of relationships, and we probably could all write a book about relationships, some form of it. But from a publisher standpoint, publishers want to work with authors who are actually dealing in that area of relationships. Like, for example, Steve Harvey's book, one of the reasons why that book did so well is because he's on the radio every day, he's traveling, he has so many areas where he can actually promote his book. So the platform. So you need incredible writing, you need a strong hook, strong and fresh hook, and you also need a platform. And then, so those are the three basic things that we, when we're evaluating a project, we look for. And then once you've gotten past that stage, we then look at the author's proposal. So let's break this down from nonfiction to fiction. I'm going to start with nonfiction. If you say that you want to write a book, give me a topic. Tell me, just throw out a topic, a nonfiction topic.
A nonfiction topic.
Darn, I don't have one.
Obviously, Boy Meets Girl falls in love with her sister. Okay.
No, that's fiction. That's fiction.
Oh,
nonfiction would be something like
nonfiction
would be like how to build a garden, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
How to do a garden, or I'll just use that as a topic. So if you're going to write a book about how to develop a garden, then from a nonfiction perspective, as an agent looking at it, we want to see that you have experience growing gardens, that people have come to you for your level of expertise. We want to see that you've written about writing gardens in other places, whether it be on a blog or in articles in newspapers or like online places like the Huffington Post or, you know, Better Homes and Gardens. So we want to see that you are out there talking about that. So a lot of people will have, I usually, remember I said those three things, you need a hook, platform, and incredible writing. As an agent, I'll work with you if you have two, and I'll help you get to the third. But a lot of people only come with one. And if you only come with one, it's very difficult for me or any of my agents to get excited about being able to sell you because the publishers want you to have those three. So I'll give you a case in point. Sometimes authors will come to me with a really good hook for a story, and they can write. But they're not out in the media. They have no kind of media platform. So I'll help the author come up with ways to expand their social media. A lot of times people will come to me with a really good hook and a platform, but then they can't write. In those cases, I might partner them with a collaborator or a ghostwriter to help them get their story out. So, but you can't just come with one. You got to come with at least three of those things. I mean, two of the three. Sometimes people get rejected because there are just too many books out on that topic. Or okay. Sometimes people will get rejected because the thing that you want to write about, the publishers have tried that area before and it didn't sell. So in the proposal, I tend to ask people to put together 4 to 5 comparative titles. And then I'll look at those comparative titles, and then I'll go and check it and see how well those books have sold. If none of those books sold, it's going to be very hard to get the publishers to want to take a chance on your topic, on your book, even though you might want to approach it from a fresh perspective. They haven't had success in that category, so they don't want to try it anymore. So that's another reason why people get rejected. Another reason that people get rejected is because they just didn't follow directions. And this is kind of a basic thing. If I tell you that I'm not taking in science fiction, then don't send me science fiction. You're going to get rejected out of hand. You know, and it's funny because a lot of people don't really pay attention to people's areas that they're interested in. I mean, those are a few reasons. The other thing that I do, just kind of that's a little bit less straightforward, I like to work with people who are willing to work hard, with people who know how to communicate, with people who don't feel like, you know, as an agent, we're working together. When you get rejected, I get rejected too. So I like to work with people who see it as a partnership and don't necessarily try to treat me like I am you know, working for them, you know, alone, like you're the only client I have, because you got to remember, I don't get paid until I sell your work. So we need to be working together.
Right.
So those are a few reasons.
Okay. Have you ever had to drop a client before? And if you did, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Have I ever had to drop a client? I'm trying to think. Have I ever had to drop a client? No. I not that I can think of. Nothing. No one's coming to my.
That's good.
Well, yeah. You know what? No, that's not true. There have been projects that I've tried to sell that I went into with the author, thinking that the author had a really fresh idea. And that they had a specific, oh, yeah, I know one specific. I can't tell the name, but there was a person who kind of didn't tell me the entire truth about his project. And he had self-published the project before, and he didn't tell me he had self-published the project before. And so, yeah, and you need to do that. If you have the book out on the market, you need to let me know that, because I have to shop that in a different way than if it were a fresh book. It can still be sold, and that happens a lot where, you know, people have self-published a book and then they've gone on to get an agent and then sell it. But this person specifically didn't let me know that. And so and not only had he self-published, but he also had already shopped the book to numerous publishers. So when I was sending out the project thinking it was fresh, they were like, we've already seen this, and we rejected it before, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. So, and they weren't rejecting it because of the quality. They were rejecting it because they didn't see the market opportunity in the book. So, but those are not good things. Like, if you've already shopped a book before, you need to let the agent know that. Or if you've worked with an agent in the past, you need to let them ask that agent to send you a list of all the people that you have already sent the project out to. Because there's a finite number of editors for specific categories. And if you've already sent it out to the 30 editors that I would send it out to, then there's no more opportunity for that, at least at this, you know, time. So yeah, there was a client that I had to, you know, kind of get rid of for that reason.
Okay. Have you ever, like, let someone, I guess the personal, maybe you felt bad for them or something, or they pleaded so much to you, you took them on anyway, but it didn't quite pan out the way you wanted it to?
When I was young in the business, I would really get caught up in the person's personality, and I would, you know, like, because you like to work with people who are hungry, you like to, you know, and I would, and I was coming into the business of agenting from the editorial, from the editorial space, and from the editorial space, you develop an author. You're not expecting the author to come 100% perfect. So at the beginning, when I first started agenting, I used to want to develop everyone. Oh, I like your idea. I'll work with you and get the manuscript where it needs to be, which could take, you know, 3 to 6 months. And then I realized, wait a minute, I'm doing all this development work for this author, and I'm still not getting any money because I don't get money until I sell the book. So you can't have a portfolio of a whole bunch of people that you're developing because you won't make any money. So at the when I first started, but you know, the business kind of hardens you a bit. I'm one of the softer side kind of agents, but there are a lot of agents out there that have no patience for anything. They're just like, you know what? No. Just no. Just no.
That's quite interesting. So now with Serendipity, you say that you got your 5 agents now. Today, what have been some of your success stories for your company as a whole?
Well, let's see. One of the categories that I really love to work in is the children's and YA category. So I've had a number of authors who have been extremely successful in that space. There's an organization called the American Library Association, and each year they give out awards. They give out the Coretta Scott King Award. They give out the Newbery Award, the Caldecott, the Michael Prince. There's a Stonewall Award. So there's a series of awards, and I've had authors who have won pretty much all of those awards, except for the Caldecott. The Caldecott is like Best Illustrator. And I also represent illustrators and photographers, too. So anyone who wants to do illustrations for a children's book or photographers who are trying to do covers, I also represent them as well. So I have had one of my successful authors, her name is Marilyn Nelson. She's a 3-time National Book Award finalist. She also was an honor winner for the Michael Prince. She's also been nominated for the Newbery Award. I also have Sundi Frazier, who won the Coretta Scott King Award. So a host of children's and YA authors who have been, you know, quite successful.
Gotcha. Now, have you ever had any conflicts or disagreements with your own agent on the decisions that they make?
Well, you know, we work as a team, so let me just kind of explain how we work as agents. It sometimes mirrors how the editorial process happens in house. So, for example, if we have a meeting every Thursday where we talk about projects that we're interested in working on, So, and then what we do is we kind of play devil's advocate for the person. So, say, for example, I might present a project and I'll say, okay, I'm bringing to the table this author with this background. This is their manuscript. This is what the story is about. This is why I like this person. And then all the agents will then say, well, why, you know, they'll come up with reasons, with questions that a potential editor might ask. So we're trying to mirror the potential rejection points that an editor might come up with. So, you know, well, this author doesn't have a big enough platform, and then I have to kind of defend why I think this author should still be taken on as a client, even though they don't have a big enough platform. Or they might say, well, I don't really understand what this book is about, so it's up to me to then, you know, explain it in a different way. So we mirror that whole process. And most often, the projects that are brought to the table are ones that have really been thought through well. And because I've been in the industry for so long, sometimes people will bring projects to the table where I'll say, oh, that book has already been done. It's called XYZ. And then they'll say, oh, wow, I never knew that. So then at that point, they're not going to work on it because it's already been done. So that's kind of how we work. And sometimes the projects, you know, you make the decision. The agent will say, okay, yeah, you guys asked some really pertinent questions. Let me go back and see if I can find the answers from the author. Or they might say, you know what, this is probably not going to be a project that I want to work on. And you got to remember, too, that the agents, we typically will work on between 10 and 15 projects. I tend to do more than that. But because I have a lot of authors who I've been working with for years, and I like to be able to work with new authors, so I bring in some new authors. But it's hard to work with too many authors at the same time. That's another reason why people get rejected, because if I'm really trying to champion an author, I can't champion 40 authors at the same time. It's just not possible.
Have you ever had to fire one of your agents or anything like that due to a disagreement between what you wanted to do and what they thought you should do?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, wow,
never.
That was quick.
The way I work is very egalitarian. So everybody gets to make their point, because publishing is very subjective. So you might have an opinion, I might have an opinion, and there's no such thing as a wrong opinion. It's just an opinion. Just
right.
You know, you can say, oh, I like this book, and 10 people might like it and 50 people might not like it. But the 10 people who like it, they're buying it. There's an audience for it. So I give everybody an opportunity to, you know, say their piece. And I mean, if I had to judge, I think I'm pretty easy to get along with, and I'm extremely helpful to my agents in terms of helping them make the business work for them. So no, I've never had to fire anyone.
Okay. So if there was an author out there listening right now who wanted to submit to Serendipity, how could they do that?
I would encourage them to go to my website. On my website, I have it broken down into categories. So you'd have to know whether you have a children's book, you have a nonfiction book, or a fiction title. And then each of those different categories has its own submission process. So if there's anyone out there who's interested in doing children's books, I'm not doing picture books right now, but that how you would submit for a picture book would be totally different from how you would submit for nonfiction and or fiction. So it's a form on my site, and you can fill out the form, and it has all the pertinent information for me to be able to evaluate your project. And I encourage people to do that, too. I encourage you to go on if you have a project. I have some really hungry agents right now who are looking for projects they can sell.
Do they always get replies after they submit something to Serendipity?
Absolutely.
Like a rejection?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you submit through the form, you will get a response. And it might take a while, but yes, you will get a response. I also have a automatic message on my form that says that if you haven't heard back from someone, that you can submit directly to me after a certain period of time. Because I want everyone to feel like they're being heard.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hard to do. Now, think about it. You know, as an agent, we have a number of different responsibilities at any given time. So there's going to be time. And I travel a lot, too. I teach, and I also write books. So I'm oftentimes out of the office, but we do like to be able to respond to everyone that submits something.
Cool.
I have a book for anyone who is trying to learn how to write. I have a book I have a book for two different styles of fiction. Or no, not fiction. One is called You Should Really Write a Book, How to Write, Sell, and Market Your Memoir, for anyone who's interested in telling their own story. And then I also have a book called Writing Great Books for Young Adults. So if you look at the market right now, memoirs and young adult novels are two of the hottest categories out there. They're really, especially the young adult market, if you think about Twilight and Harry Potter and The Hunger Games, a lot of those books are being turned into films. And so anyone who's interested in learning about how to write for that market, I'm encouraging people to, you know, check out that book. And then also if you're trying to tell your story, a lot of people have a story to tell, and you need to be able to determine whether or not it's a commercially viable book. And once you determine that, you need to know how to sell it and how to get people excited about it and how to market it. And my book explains to you how to do that.
That's what's up. So, Regina, tell us again where people can go and find more information about you, give out your social media sites,
okay.
Things like that.
All right. So I have multiple sites, but I'll start with Serendipity. So my website for Serendipity is www.serendipitylit.com, and the Twitter handle for that is @SerendipityLit. Should I spell it?
Yes.
Okay. It's Serendipity is spelled SERENDIPITYLIT. I also have a site for the book, which is called youshouldwriteabook.co, not .com, but .co. And then I also have, so I wrote these books for people who were interested in, you know, learning the craft of writing. But as you know, writing a really good book is not just about being able to put pen to paper. It's about being able to channel a good story and being able to be creative and to be inspired and have something come up. So I also have this tea line called Possibilities. And the tea line was designed especially for my authors to get them motivated. So there's three blends in the tea line. There's creativity, clarity, and productivity, and they follow the creative process. So if you know you want to come up with something really special, you drink the creativity. I call it a muse in a cup. And then most creative people will come up with way too many things and too many ideas, and you then need to focus it, be able to put it on paper, and balance yourself. And so that's the clarity. And then once you've developed it, then you have to get out and get people magnetized to your idea and get excited about it and be able to sell it. And so that's the productivity. So the T-line follows the creative process. So.
Oh, wow.
What's that?
I said, wow, that is something completely new.
Right.
So the T Lines website is Possibilities, and that's P O S S I B I L I T E A S dot C O.
Let me go on this.
Checking that one out.
It's very cool. It was in Ebony in the April edition in April 2011, and we've gotten quite a bit of press on it.
Oh,
Tamika, are you looking at that right now?
Yeah, I'm going right now.
I knew it.
Yeah, I'm checking it out now. You said .co?
.co, yeah.
Maybe I'm spelling it wrong. It's not coming up.
It's possibilitees.co.
Oh.
Got it?
Yeah, I got it. I want to tweet it out to everybody and Facebook it.
Thank you.
Okay, cool. Okay, yeah, I'm going to be real nosy. Okay.
So
you guys can be able to go on there too. This is cool.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, go gift it for holiday. Go gift it for the holiday for all those creative people in your life. And I on that site, I also have I do a series of interviews with people about their creative process. So whether it's singers or dancers or writers, anybody in the creative space.
Nice Christmas present, Tamika. Hint, hint.
anyway, I'll just
give it. No, she didn't.
I feel like I've been talking the whole time.
Because what this is, it's an informative session. So we're not doing a lot of talking. We're doing a lot of listening and learning.
Gotcha.
So I know I definitely was taking notes and things like that. So
do you guys have any other, like, dying questions that you've been wanting to know about? Did I explain the agenting process?
You explained the agenting process down to the
key.
I really don't.
Literally.
I had all my notes. So, you know, I asked all my questions. Myra, do you have any questions you want to ask?
No, she pretty much went over everything.
Yeah, while you're thinking about that or maybe coming up with some other questions, let me just add a couple things. Do I still have time?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So I have Serendipity Literary Agency, but I also have Serendipity Creative. So say, for example, you were a talent. And you had an idea, but you didn't know how to write it. You didn't know how to put together a proposal. Then you would come to Serendipity Creative, and Serendipity Creative will help you either by finding a ghostwriter or a collaborator for you, or working with you on your proposal. And that's for people who have ideas but aren't quite there and ready for the project to be shopped. So that's another thing, too. I know a lot of times I just find that people are extremely creative, but they might not necessarily have the skill set to execute on a full book. But that doesn't mean your idea can't be out there in the marketplace. It just means that you need some assistance, and that's what Serendipity Creative helps with. The other thing that Serendipity Creative does is helps with the marketing. So as an author, remember I said earlier that it's important to think of your book as content and not just a book. For people who think about their book as just a book, they're leaving so much money on the table. You really need to think of your book as content. So, for example, I'm working with a team of psychiatrists right now who are going to have a book, but they're also we're going to do webinars, we're going to do boot camps, like couple boot camps, and it's all going to be centered around the content that they have in their book. So you make a lot more money when you see your book as content and not just a book that people pick up and read.
Gotcha.
And you'll find that most successful authors try to really leverage all aspects of it. Another thing is I often ask people, I think it's very, very important when you're working with an agent to know what for the agent to understand and know what the motivation is for you to write the book. And I ask people this up front. I'll say to you, what is your motivation for writing this book? And there are no wrong answers to this question. Some people will say, Regina, look, I'm just trying to make some money. As an agent, I need to know that. Some people will say, well, I'm trying to extend my brand. I have a brand out there, and I feel like I need a book to be able to extend it. Some people will say, I'm trying to start a movement, and I need people to understand the movement. So that's kind of an advocacy book or an activism book. Need to know that. Some people will write a book because they'll just say, they say, I have a story on my heart that I need to tell. Need to know that. Some people will say that they want to write a book because they are doing talks around the, they're on the speaker circuit, and they're doing talks around the country, and they need to have a book to sell in the back of the room. So.
Okay.
All of those different, and there's a whole bunch of other reasons too, but those are some of the more common reasons. And as an agent, if someone came to me and said, Regina, I'm trying to make some money, then I know that I need to sell that book to maybe the top six publishers, because a smaller mid-sized publisher will probably not be able to give the kind of advance that this person is looking for. If the person says to me, I am writing because I want to, I'm an academic, I need to get tenure, then I know I need to go to a university press. If the person is saying I'm doing an activism type of book, then I know that I should go to a mid-sized publisher who's willing to put a little bit more effort into the marketing over the long haul about trying to promote the book and the work behind it. So it's, you can see why it's important for an agent to know, because it helps me, helps direct me as an agent to the kind of publisher I should be submitting your work to. So I hope that's helpful.
It definitely is helpful. How do personally? I know we've talked about, you know, the agent and what the agents look for in Arthur, but what should Arthur look for in an agent? How do we know that this agent is going to be beneficial for us, that they're even worth our time?
Excellent question. I think there's a series of questions that you can and maybe should ask an agent when you're considering working with them. You know, it becomes kind of like a marriage to some extent. The person is working with you and really trying to, you need to make sure that the agent really is going to look out for your best interest. And there needs to be chemistry. So if you look about, think about it from, I like to break things down in threes because it's easy to remember and it's also a little catchy. So first thing you want to think about is character. You want to make sure that this person is, because agents, what they do is the money that is made goes to the agent first, and then the agent takes their 15% and then sends the rest of the money over to the author. So you need to make sure that the agent has the kind of character and integrity necessary that you'd be willing to allow them to handle your money. So you want to look at the agent's character. The other thing you want to look at is chemistry. You know, it's one thing, this person, you're going to want to call this person, you're going to want to communicate with this person, and you need to have a good communication style. Some agents are more email-driven. Some agents like to get on the phone. Some agents, you know, don't want to send stuff and send the rejections until you get a whole bunch of them and then send them all at once. Some agents will send things as they come in. So you want to have the right kind of chemistry with your agent that works with you. If you know you're the kind of person that likes to get on the phone and chop it up and say, okay, tell me what they're saying and blah, 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 then that's one kind of agent. Then some agents are like, no, I don't have time to talk to you, but I will communicate with you, but it's going to be via email. And you're going to get really, you know, strong notes and feedback from me, but it's going to be mostly via email. So you just want to make sure that your style, your working style works well with them. So I categorize that under chemistry. So you got character and chemistry. And the third thing, and I think is important no matter who you're trying to hire, and that's competence. So you want to look and make sure that this person is competent to do the job. And how do you check for competency? One, you know that they've sold books before. Two, And if they haven't sold books, that they at least have the kind of relationships necessary to sell books. Because, you know, there are new people coming to the business all the time. And it doesn't mean that they can't do it, because sometimes the younger agents are the hungrier. So, but you need to feel like they have a competency level about how books are sold, how to sell them, where to sell them to, that they have relationships with specific editors and or publishing houses. You want to see that they understand how to negotiate a contract. You want to see that they have the ability to make a call and get a meeting with an editor. So as agents, you know, one of the reasons we are able to sell books to editors is because we have lunches and dinners and drinks and breakfasts with these editors on a constant basis, and we're sitting down having conversations with them and asking them, you know, what kind of books they're looking for, what are their certain sensibilities. And oftentimes too, as an agent, I will sit down with an editor, and we will come up with ideas, and then the editor will say, okay, Regina, go find somebody to write that book. So you want to make sure that you have somebody who's competent. Agents come with all different backgrounds. Some come from an editorial background. So those kind of agents will, you know, oftentimes work with you really strongly on your book and make sure that it's editorially sound. Some agents come from a lawyer background, so they know how to negotiate a contract and they know exactly what should go into it. Some agents will come from a marketing and or publicity background, meaning they know once the book is sold, all the things you need to do to be able to go out and promote it. And some agents don't come from any of that. And doesn't mean that they can't or don't agent, aren't good agents, but those are some of the, you have to decide, again, on the chemistry, you have to decide where your weaknesses are and try to figure out, okay, well, I'm going to need an editorially strong agent because I know I need some serious tweaking. Some people will say, okay, I'm good on the editorial side, but I'm going to need somebody who has a good eye for publicity. Or, you know, you get the point. So,
yeah.
So character, chemistry, and competence.
Character, chemistry, and competence.
Okay. Oh, were you saying something, Tamika?
Oh, no, I'm tweeting out.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, we're running a little bit low on time. Do you have any final, like, advice or anything for people who may be currently looking for an agent or a publisher or anything like that?
Sure. So there are numerous places to find agents. There's the Guide to Literary Agents. There is Writer's Marketplace. And I think it's important that you know that when you're ready for an agent. A lot of people will start the process before they're quite ready. I encourage people to go to conferences, writers' conferences, to do your due diligence and really know what it takes to be in this business, because publishing is a business. A lot of people get excited about wanting to have their book out on the marketplace, but a lot of books will be out there, but they don't sell. So just really understand what it takes to be an author. Talk to other authors. Really share information and go on websites and webinars. I'm going to be doing a webinar for Writer's Digest in the top of the year in January about how to write a memoir and how to really craft your story. Also, I have a blog on Essence, so essence.com if you're interested in hearing more about writing a memoir. And then for anybody who's writing a young adult book, I'm doing a contest right now where you don't have to have a query, you don't have to have a pitch, and you don't even have to have your full manuscript written. You just need the first 250 words of your manuscript. And you submit those, and the contest ends November 30th. But you can find out about it on my website, but it's in conjunction with Gotham Writer Center. And there's wonderful rewards that you get for being a winner. We pick 5 winners, and I have 11 editors who are participating and who are judging the contest. And oftentimes people who win this contest go on to get agents and or get their books published. So that's the you can go to my website. I've given that address to serendipitylit.com, or you can go to Gotham's website, and it's there as well.
Okay. Well, Ms. Regina, I definitely want to thank you for coming on, exposing yourself to us, giving us so much information on agency and how to inquire and what we should look for on both ends. So I really appreciate that, and I definitely wish you a lot of success in the future. And just 13 years, that's a long time in this business.
No, and I appreciate I appreciate you having me on, and I really had a great time. And I love sharing this information because it's not like information that a lot of people know about. And I hope that if anyone has any additional questions and want to shoot me an email, they're welcome to come to the website and submit a question to me through info@serendipitylit.com. And I also encourage people to buy the book.
Cool. Thank you so much, ma'am. I appreciate it. Take care of yourself.
All right.
And I hope that we could definitely cross paths in the future.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, everyone. Ms. Regina Brooks of Serendipity Lit. Again, if you want to find out more information about her agency, please go to serendipitylit.com. Her Twitter is @serendipitylit, I want to say. Yeah, Serendipity Lit. They make it really easy for you. And also, we have tweeted it out to you. So, again, if you follow us on Twitter, AAM Book Club, you will see all these links and things that we have put out. We've also put out the possibilities.co. on our Twitter and also on Facebook. We've already sent out to a few authors who've liked it, and I imagine they went to the site to go see what it's all about. So, again, thank you so much to Ms. Regina Brooks and everything that she's doing in the industry. I'm really excited. I was really humbled to have her on the show. The very first time we've had an agent here on the show since it aired, since debut in 2008. So that was really excited on our end. So without further ado, guys, we're going to definitely call it a night. We have about 13 minutes left. I do want guys to know that we will not be on the show live next Tuesday. However, I will more likely be rebroadcasting our interview with Kyla Perrin that was on the show on the 6th of this month because that was the election day. So we didn't have the biggest audience that we wanted to. But until then, we will be back live here in December on December 4th with Miss Misha Meek. I'm sorry. She's going to be coming on the show on December 4th, and then we're going to be having a panel discussion on December 11th called The Facebook Author. And this is going to be on how to market your book just off of not just using Facebook as your only platform. So I'm excited about that panel discussion as well. And then, of course, as I stated earlier in the show, on December 18th, we're going to be announcing our books of the year. We're going to be having various Christmas programs and holiday programs throughout the year as well. But December 18th will be our last show for 2012 until we return in the new year. So without further ado, it's been a great show. I really enjoyed this informative panel that we've had with Regina. I really enjoyed that. Really informative. I myself was learning things, even with sitting in the CEO chair of Delphine Publications, even with operating AAMBC. I definitely am not afraid to admit that I learn new things every single day in this industry.
Oh, my goodness. Not the diva.
Diva? Boom. Get it right. It's boss lady.
Oh, see, look at there. Look.
It's the boss. So, all right, I'm going to go ahead and end the show with some of my favorite music by the singer Joe. And I will see you all here on December 4th. You guys enjoy your Thanksgiving. Eat lots of turkey and stuffings and sweet potato pie and yams
and
the macaroni and cheese and all the, you know, the hams and the cranberry sauce, all that. Oh, it's going to be good.
Whoa. You are trying to give people diabetes right now.
I mean, hey, you only live once.
You're just yellow right now.
Hey, it is what it is. Hey, eat in small portions, you all. Eat in small portions.
There
you guys
go.
Have
I'm
a
kill
a
off our listeners.
Have a great Thanksgiving, y'all. Follow us on our website at aambookclub.com, on Twitter at aambookclub.com, and again, on Facebook, search AAMBC. Y'all have a great night.
Night.
I should mention.